The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Dave's Garden e-newsletter, the Raleigh News and Observer, the Triangle Gardener Magazine, the HGTV's Garden e-newsletter, and maybe from 1001 Hints and Tips for Your Garden by Reader's Digest. We'll start with the Raleigh News and Observer. This article is titled, Planting for Butterflies and Pollinators, a Most Worthy New Year's Resolution, by Norman Winter. This time of year, garden writers all over the country try to reach readers with ideas of New Year's resolutions. Over the years, you may have seen topics like hire only licensed or certified landscape professionals, compost, recycle, go native, plant water-wise, all of which are super. This year, I really want to reach out to you with the canary in the coal mine. Dr. Jeffrey Glassberg, president and founder of the North American Butterfly Association, told me when we first met, butterflies were like the canary in the coal mine when it came to our ecosystem. A healthy butterfly population, where new generations are constantly created, speaks volumes for the overall health of the local environment. I saw that firsthand as director of the National Butterfly Center in Mission, Texas. This property, owned by the North American Butterfly Association, is located on the lower Rio Grande River. Here, native plants are arranged in gardens, providing everything to not only attract but sustain the life of butterflies. Over 200 species have been identified, which is quite an accomplishment when you consider most states in their entirety have far less. An example is Georgia, where I live now. It has documented 160 species. The larger lesson taught at National Butterfly Center was when you start providing for butterflies, your whole localized ecosystem seems to change. I was able to see this at the Columbus Botanical Garden and the Coastal Georgia Botanical Garden, where I later served as director. Birds who eat bugs, including your butterflies, and those who eat seeds from plants you grow show up. At the same time, hummingbirds start to frequent many of the flowers while also carrying on pollination. Dragonflies, the arch enemy of butterflies, proliferate as well. Rabbits show up to eat their portion of some of the plants growing for butterflies, perhaps providing a little weed patrol too. Then animals who eat birds and rabbits show up, and life really gets exciting. Once you start growing for pollinators, butterflies, bees, and birds, you've created your own National Geographic spectacle. A word of caution. It will be hard for you to go indoors to do your regular chores, pay the bills, and cook the meals. The kids may get off the video games. You will find your outlook on caterpillars changing. At almost every seminar I give, there's a stopping point where I ask the audience by show of hands if they are caterpillar friendly. I'm delighted to say I sense a real change within the gardening public. The caterpillar, once considered an enemy of the garden, has now become the recognized reward. Woe to the lizard or bird that picks one off. One day in Savannah, taking a couple of VIPs on a tour of the gardens, we found ourselves lingering at a Christmas bush cinna. We weren't photographing the beautiful yellow blossoms, but instead, the cloudless sulfur caterpillar. These are among the most striking in the world of butterflies. My wake-up call at the importance of caterpillars came in Savannah when I received a phone call from a lady that was virtually in tears. She had monarch caterpillars, but all of her milkweed had been devoured. She asked almost hysterically if she could bring them to us since we had so many milkweeds. At least I thought we had many. She showed up with a box containing 100 caterpillars. I walked through the garden. A little milkweed plant got one caterpillar, while larger plants were gifted with two or three. It took no time before we had little to no leaves as well. Here is hoping in 2019 you will start gardening with butterflies and other pollinators in mind. Your home ecosystem will thrive while providing you with beauty and untold joy. Take these cold, weary days to research the plants recommended for your area. Now from Dave's Garden e-newsletter. Gardeners, I think, dream bigger than emperors. That was said by Mary Cantwell. Early seeds to start in January. Stop twiddling those green thumbs and start planting in January. It isn't all icy roads and blowing snow. Here are seeds to get you thinking about the growing season ahead. The sun rises late and sets early. Whether spring starts in March or May for your garden, there's no getting around the fact January seems unnecessarily long. Here are some seeds to help you stop twiddling those green thumbs. Rosemary. Rosemary takes a long time to grow. I like to start mine 3 months before warm weather, which means I start them in January or February. The plants are slow to germinate and have generally lower germination rates than other herbs, which means I spend a lot of time staring at my seedling flats, wondering which cell will pop up next. Since I grow rosemary as a container plant, I don't have to worry about popping it in the ground right away. I pop my seedlings up and keep them on a windowsill to catch the rays. On warm spring days, before the last frost date, I put them outside during the day and bring them in at night. Only when the weather has turned do I leave them out 24/7. Sage. Technically, most of us could wait another month or two to start sage from seed indoors, but I pop mine up before setting it out. This could be an excuse to start more seeds in January than I really need to. Sage takes about 3 weeks to germinate and does not reach mature size for 2 years, which is why most gardeners prefer to grow them from cuttings. If you enjoy the seed starting process, another year or so won't matter. Starting sage early is also acceptable for container gardens, as you don't need to worry about frost dates. Sage is hardy to about 30 degrees Fahrenheit below zero. Thyme is another one of those slow-growing woody perennials with poor germination rates. Germination takes anywhere from 7 to 28 days for them to raise their little green heads if they are kept consistently moist and at temperatures around 70 degrees Fahrenheit. Since thyme takes its time when it comes to germination, give it a hand by covering your tray with plastic wrap. Creating a mini greenhouse helps the soil maintain a constant temperature and retain moisture. As thyme grows, keep the soil consistently moist but never wet. This will likely damage your seedlings. Pot them up when they are around 4 inches tall, or transplant them into a container if you plan to add them to a container herb garden. When the threat of frost is over, move them into the garden. Microgreens. The trouble with starting most vegetable seeds in January is they grow quickly. Leaving them in containers can put them at risk of growing root-bound. Unless you give in to the temptations to garden indoors during winter, starting tomatoes, peppers, greens, and squash in January is not practical. Growing microgreens bypasses these issues since they get harvested at an early age. I grow microgreens using leftover seed from the previous year. Sprouting older seeds tests their germination rates and gives me a quick harvest. Lettuce, mustards, arugula, kale, collards, chard, beets, and other edible greens all make excellent candidates. To grow microgreens indoor, select a shallow container with decent drainage and fill it with about 2 inches of potting soils. Sow your seeds thickly over the surface and cover with a fine layer of soil and mist until the surface is evenly moist, and put in a windowsill or grow under a grow light. Different varieties have different germination rates, so try and group greens with similar growth rates together. Keep the seed bed moist during germination and harvest microgreens once they develop their first true leaves and sprouts. Like microgreens, sprouts are a good way to use up last year's seed or to test germination rates. Beans, peas, and alfalfa make nutritious, flavorful sprouts that require minimal effort. All you need are your seeds, a glass jar, and some cheesecloth. Place your seeds in the jar and secure the cheesecloth over the lid to create an easy drainer for your seeds. Soak the seeds thoroughly to revive them from dormancy. Soaking time and practice vary from variety to variety, so do a little research about the best way to soak your seeds. Once they're finished soaking, drain them. Rinse your seeds 2 to 3 times a day by spraying them with cool water. After each rinse, drain and leave them in a place with good air circulation. When they have sprouted to your liking, rinse one last time, eat, and enjoy. The best part about starting seeds in January is that it helps the time pass, putting you closer to pore over those seeds catalogs and choose the seeds for this year's garden. And I find that looking at seeds is almost as satisfying as planting them, especially if done from a cozy armchair with a cup of mint tea from last year's harvest. And from HGTV's e-newsletter, Annual Flowers for Year-Round Color by Julie Martins Forney. Sweet pea. Kick off the growing season with this cool season favorite. Sweet pea vines climb by tendrils and need a trellis. Plants top out at about 6 feet. In zones 8 and 9, tuck seeds into soil in late fall for spring blooms. Plant along a trellis or fence line, or use to add color to a vegetable garden, or in cutting gardens. Snow Princess Sweet Alyssum. This dainty bloomer craves cool temperatures and typically stages the best show in spring and fall, or winter in warmest regions. Sweet Alyssum flowers come in a variety of colors, including white, pink, and purple tones. Plant in spring or fall. Tuck along edges of planting beds or use in hanging baskets or containers. It's a good plant for a butterfly garden. Nasturtium. Colorful nasturtium turns any garden into a festive floral show. Plants grow easily from seed and prefer poor soil. So, after all danger of frost has passed, edible flowers and leaves offer a peppery bite. Flowers start early summer and keep coming until fall frost. Blanket slopes, tuck along bed edges or in containers. Spirit Mallow, spider flower. Spider flower gives a strong, long flower show from summer heat to hard frost. Plants add a textural element to gardens with their tall, wispy form. Stems top out around 4 feet. Sow seed in early spring or fall. Plant seedlings after all danger of frost. Landscape use. Plant as a backdrop to shorter flowers in beds. Use in butterfly or cottage gardens. Now from the Triangle Gardener magazine, grow winter jasmine for its spectacular blooms. by Val Engel. In the dregs of winter, early blooming flowers are a welcome harbinger of spring. One of my favorites, winter jasmine, begins to bloom in January or February with cheery yellow flowers that promise the sun and warmth will return soon. This easy-to-grow, deer-resistant plant earns its place in any garden for several reasons. Part of the olive family, winter jasmine is a vine-like deciduous shrub that can be trained into various habits depending on need. If you have a steep slope that is hard to mow or need to control erosion, winter jasmine is an excellent choice for a fast-growing ground cover. Its growth is dense, effectively minimizing and suppressing weeds. The effect of this during bloom is spectacular. Be aware, however, winter jasmine roots easily where stems touch the ground. This is excellent if you have a large area to cover, but it may not be the best ground cover for small spaces. Winter jasmine also tolerates hard pruning, which keeps the plant in a low, cascading shrub form. Even in the period between leaf drop and blooming, the weeping green stems create striking architectural interest in the garden. Buds form pink-red and add extra color. When planted in front of rich-colored evergreens, winter jasmine provides an excellent contrast. As the branches age, they turn brown, so heavy pruning after bloom is recommended to promote dense new growth. If you do not have a lot of space, training winter jasmine onto a trellis is a wonderful way to enjoy the winter blooms. As a climber, winter jasmine can reach up to 15 feet. Similarly, plant it at the top of a wall and let the vine-like branches cascade down. I've also seen incredible examples of this plant covering a long stretch of fence and cascading over the other side. If you plan to train your jasmine vertically, however, make sure to tie up the stems as it climbs. This is one plant that does not twine. Another excellent attribute of winter jasmine is its tolerance of various growing cultures. Though it prefers well-drained soil, it will thrive in a wide range of soil types, including clay. With regards to light, it will take full sun to deep shade. It is also drought tolerant and deer resistant. Relatively hardy, winter jasmine survives down to zone 6. The only thing one might find to complain about is that the flowers are scentless. But this is a small price to pay for its flowery display during the coldest part of the year. A few interesting cultivars of winter jasmine exist, but unfortunately are not widely available in the retail market. Arium has green foliage that turns gold through the summer. Nenum is a slow-growing and compact dwarf variety. The leaves of Mystique have white margins, while the foliage of Variegatum is edged in white with a gray center. If you are looking for more color in your winter garden, give winter jasmine a try. No matter which growing habit you decide on training, it won't disappoint. And some garden events coming up. Lunchbox Talk, How We Grew Plants on the International Space Station, January the 24th, from 12 noon until 1 p.m. The Assembly of the International Space Station, ISS, provided the opportunity for quality plant research in space. Learn how the facility is capable of supporting long-term plant growth in microgravity. Growing Arabidopsis thaliana, Thalecress. It's free, but pre-registration required. Call 919-962-0522. 919-962-0522. This happens at North Carolina Botanical Garden in Chapel Hill. Science of the Season, Exploring Winter, January the 26th from 2 to 4 p.m. Explore the many ways plants, people, and other animals live during winter at this afternoon of discovery, fun activities, and performances. This exploration for participants of all ages will be in and around the Doris Duke Center. It's a free drop-in event. Parking fees apply. No registration needed. An adult chaperone is required for children. It's at Sarah P. Duke Gardens in Durham. Call 919-668-1707. 919-668-1707 for more information. Also on January the 26th, a garden soils class, 8:30 a.m. until 12:30 p.m. If you build it, they will come. Understanding and Improving Garden Soils with Bryce Lang. Learn basic soil principles and how to use that understanding to improve garden soils, properly prepare garden beds, reduce fertilizer inputs, compost, and maximize growth in the gardens. There is a fee, and you need to pre-register. This happens at J.C. Ralston Arboretum, located at North Carolina State University in Raleigh. Call 919-515-3132. 919-515-3132. And a propagation workshop, January the 26th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Learn how to asexually propagate some of your favorite plants in the J.C. Ralston Arboretum's collections via hardwood cuttings and go home with a greater knowledge of plant propagation and with many freshly propagated plants. There is a fee and you need to pre-register. It's at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum. Call 919-515-3132. 919-515-3132 for more information. And how to grow and repot your orchid for beginners. January 26th, 9:30 to 12 noon. Learn from the Triangle Orchid Society the basics of growing orchids in the home environment. Bring one orchid for repotting. There is a fee and you need to pre-register. This happens at the Sarah P. Duke Gardens in Durham. Call 919-668-1707. 919-668-1707 for further information. Now, from 1001 Hints and Tips for Your Garden, here's some information on the endive. Chicory cousins. Endive is part of the chicory family and comes in three forms: the leafy salad green known as curly endive, the broadleaf endive called escarole, and the crisp blanched sprouts called Belgian endive or witloof. Among the other relatives are the fashionable red-leaved chicories known as radicchio. Too much heat causes bitterness. In regions with hot summers, pick the spring crop of curly endive and escarole young before the heat has a chance to ruin the taste. Better still, plant in late summer to mature in the shorter, cooler days of fall. Grow as you would lettuce. Give curly endive and escarole a sunny spot in humus-rich soil. Try planting them among tomatoes to provide shade from the scorching midday sun. Also, make sure the soil is well drained, since endive roots rot easily. Like all chicories, curly endive and escarole have a slightly bitter taste. Mellow the hearts of the plants by tying up the outer leaves as they grow. Blanch Belgian endive to produce the crisp, mild-tasting sprouts called chicons. Wait till the plant is two-thirds grown, usually about 60 days. Tie the outer leaves upright, loosely, with rubber bands. Untie after rainstorms to prevent rot, and retie when the plant has dried. Blanching generally takes 2 to 3 weeks. Harvest only on a day when the plants are dry. Grow Belgian endive as a root crop in summer. Take it inside for forcing during the winter months. Sow about 4 months before the first hard frost date in your area, and thin seedlings 8 to 12 inches apart. If they form seed stalks, cut them down and allow the plants to regrow. Once frost threatens to freeze the crown, dig the roots. Cut the vegetation above the neck and trim the roots, leaving them 8 to 10 inches long. Place the roots upright in a box filled with moist earth and store in a darkened room or cellar. Pour an inch or so of water into the container so that just the tips of the roots are wet. Make sure the root cellar or storage room is consistently cool, around 50 to 60 Fahrenheit, and has steady 90 to 95% humidity. You will harvest chicons in 3 to 4 weeks. No dark cellar. Put the roots in a box or crate covered with black plastic and keep in a cool room. To prevent rotting, create a little space for ventilation. To harvest from the forcing box, cut the heads with a sharp knife just above the top of the root. They will regrow 2 or 3 times, depending on the strength of the root and the quality of the care. Produce chicons over several months simply by leaving a portion of the roots in cold storage and forcing only a few at the time as needed. After harvesting, keep chicons cool and in total darkness. If you expose them to too much light before they're eaten, there is a good chance they will turn both hard and bitter. Belgian endive is also known as witloof. Try Zoom, Flash, and the pale pink Robin. Curly endive is known to chefs as frise and has delicate, finely cut leaves. Largest and hardiest is the slow-bolting, frost-tolerant Salad King. Slightly smaller are the flavorful Gallia, Ruffic, and the French Trefine. Escarole has large outer leaves and a crunchy heart. Good choices are Cornet d'Anjou, Cinco, Sugarloaf, and Nouval and Neos. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have comments or questions, call 919-832-5138.